I'm a solicitor at the Inner City Legal Centre. The centre is a small community legal centre. It has a split mission. It provides general community legal services to people in the inner city area. But we also have a specialist service providing legal advice and representation to gay, lesbian and transgender people from across New South Wales. The material we put in our submission and what I'm going to speak to you about today comes from our experience over many years of speaking to gay and lesbian and transgender people. The discussion paper that was issued by the Commission canvassed many of the discriminatory laws and particularly the Commonwealth laws. So the presentation I do today, I'd focus on areas that either weren't identified or only touched on in that discussion paper and that have been a significant area of work for the centre over the past few years. And that's the position of gay and lesbian parents and their children. For the last 10 years and more, the Inner City Legal Centre has been providing legal advice in this area, particularly to lesbian couples who have decided to have and raise a child together using donor sperm to conceive that child. On some occasions, anonymous donors are used, although more often there's a known donor, commonly a gay man. So the lesbian couple and their child or children consider themselves to be a family unit and operate in that way. Often the child will know or have some contact with the sperm donor. On some cases, that donor may have a close and parental involvement with that child. So there are a wide range of family types. But I suppose the most common would be a lesbian couple who've had one or more children. Sometimes it will be one member of that couple who is the birth mother. Sometimes both of them have given birth to children. And sometimes it might be the same donor who has donated sperm for both of the women to have a child. Very rarely some gay male couples may consider using a surrogate mother to have a child. I've only come across one case of that in my experience, and because of the laws relating to surrogacy in Australia, it's not a common thing. Back in 1999, our dissenter published a small booklet called Talking Turkey as a legal guide for people entering into these kinds of family arrangements, and we did an updated online edition last year, an expanded version, and that's in response to the numbers of people that we have coming to us seeking advice. I think I mentioned in the submission that we weren't able to provide data on the numbers of people and the numbers of children affected, but certainly based on our experience in our one centre, there are considerable numbers of people affected. Sorry. The difficulties that these families experience, and what we and they usually perceive as discrimination, arises from the lack of legal recognition of the relationships in those families. The most difficult position, in a way, is for the member of the couple who does not give birth to the child, who I will refer to as the co-mother for ease of reference, as opposed to the birth mother. So the co-mother does not have any legally recognised relationship with that child who has been born to her partner. And this can have a significant impact in many areas of life, but in particular on financial entitlements for both the members of that couple and the child. So I just thought I'd go through some examples of that. As it was noted in the discussion paper, that there's no entitlement to parenting leave upon the birth of a child for the female partner of the birth mother or the co-mother. So that definitions used in the Workplace Relations Act federally and the Industrial Relations Act in New South Wales, they give an entitlement to maternity leave and paternity leave can't be used by same-sex couples, because the paternity leave entitlement is obviously only applies to a male partner of a woman giving birth. The next issue that I'd like to mention, which I think is also mentioned in the discussion paper, is that a co-mother doesn't have any automatic right to paid carer's leave in relation to the child that she considers to be her child. And this is under, again, the definitions in the Workplace Relations Act. There is a provision that provides a right to paid leave to care for a member of the household, which obviously would suffice in many circumstances, but nonetheless, it won't always cover the situations that people find themselves in. For example, if the couple have separated, the co-mother may not be living in the same household as the child. The child may have grown up and left home and is no longer sharing a household, but nonetheless there's still that strong bond that would otherwise give that entitlement. When, I shouldn't say when, if a lesbian couple separate after the birth of a child or children, the situation in relation to child support under the child support legislation is much more complex and disadvantaging for them. And the situation will be different depending on where a child, with whom a child lives after separation. So if a child after separation lived mainly with the birth mother and had contact with the co-mother, that birth mother has no entitlement to claim child support from the co-mother. This is because under the Child Support Assessment Act, it's only parents who are liable to pay child support, and the co-mother is not recognised as a parent under that legislation, which uses definitions of a parent from the Family Law Act, which the Family Law Act then refers back to state legislation, which is in New South Wales would be the Status of Children Act. In contrast to that, if the child after separation lived mainly with the co-mother, the birth mother would have an obligation to pay child support under the Child Support Assessment Act because she is recognised as a parent of that child. In that situation where it is a birth mother who is unable to claim child support from a co-mother under the Child Support Assessment Act, she would have an option of making a claim for child maintenance under the Family Law Act through the courts. That's obviously a more difficult and expensive procedure, and the child support scheme was set up to avoid the necessity for that. And she would have to prove to the satisfaction of the court the nature of the relationship with the co-mother at the time the child was conceived, and that there was some kind of commitment to financially support that child. So depending on what evidence was available, and it may be many years ago that those conversations were had. The next matter I'd like to mention is that if the co-mother dies intestate, that child has no rights of inheritance under the intestacy rules in the Wills, Probate and Administration Act, again because the child is not recognised as a child of the co-parent. There may be grounds for that child to make an application under the Family Provision Act for a share of the estate, but again, that is a expensive and time-consuming process for someone to have to go through, and we would submit it would be more desirable if that relationship was recognised to avoid that. It was something you mentioned in your questions to the previous speaker, that when people are forced to go to court as opposed to be able to use the usual administrative processes that are available to other people, this can be particularly difficult for people in gay and lesbian relationships because they aren't always prepared to make public the nature of their relationship. I've certainly had as clients, for example, a lesbian couple who were both from a migrant background and who'd had a child together. They'd moved to Sydney from interstate. For both those women, neither their parents, brothers, sisters knew that they were in a lesbian relationship or knew they had a child. So you can imagine that at some time in the future, if one of them were to die and the issues about their estate and superannuation and so on it would be a very confusing situation for the other family members who didn't know the current situation and so on. So any thing that can avoid people having to be dragged through complex legal processes and having possibility to disclose things they'd rather not would be preferable. To overcome some of the practical difficulties that lesbian couples experience in relation to their children, these can be as simple as being in a position to sign the school notes or give consent to medical treatment and so on, which the co-mother doesn't have any capacity to do. We recommend that the couple make an application under the Family Law Act for consent orders to be made, parenting orders, that does give the co-mother some responsibilities and rights in relation to that child, for the family court to make those orders. However, this is very much a second best solution, because those orders don't make the co-mother a parent of that child and don't solve any of the difficulties that I've mentioned in the examples I've given you so far. It really is limited to solving some of the everyday matters between the parents and the child. Now, the lack of legal recognition of the relationship between the co-mother and the child affects entitlements in numerous ways and in many of the areas that were mentioned in the discussion paper. So things such as tax concessions or childcare benefits and so on, that all rely on the definition of someone being a child of a person, will not apply to that family unit. And they, as we've just heard with the speaker in relation to superannuation, they all have financial disadvantages to people. I'd just like to contrast the position of an opposite sex couple who conceive a child using donor sperm, because I think this makes very clear where the discrimination lies. Under the Status of Children Act in New South Wales, and also under the Family Law Act, where an opposite sex couple conceive a child using donor sperm, the male member of that couple is deemed to be the parent of the child born using donor sperm, even though he has no biological connection with that child. By operation of law, he becomes the parent of that child, and for all purposes is the parent of that child. So our submission would be that if a similar capacity was given to same-sex couples, that where a child is conceived using donor sperm while the couple are in a relationship and where both consent to that conception and both have the intention of having and raising a child together, that the co-mother could be deemed by operation of law to be a parent of that child. And that if that was the case, the opposite sex couple would be treated in the same way as the same-sex couple. And I think the children would benefit from that substantially. In the letter I received from the Commission, superannuation was the other area where I was asked to mention. I'm not an expert in superannuation law, which I gather is a very arcane field. I suppose we have had clients come to us who have been unhappy about the uncertainty surrounding the interdependency test. They feel that they should be able to be entirely certain about who receives the death benefit under their superannuation fund if they should die before their partner, and they're not happy about it resting with discretion. Particularly, I think that's the case because the interdependency test, it's a cumulative one, so you need to live together and provide financial support for the person and provide domestic support. There may be some couples who can't satisfy all those criteria, or who may not wish to provide that level of detail about their lives. So very much the message from our clients is that they feel that they should be able to know exactly who their superannuation benefits that they have been the people contributing to, where those benefits should go. So I think that's the end of
Thank you. Today. The parenting order under the Family Law Act doesn't have any effect on the child support agency system, does it?
No, it does not.
Have you been involved with many of these applications to the family court to get consent orders?
Yes, quite a few. It's usually not a problem to get such orders, although it can be more or less difficult depending on which court you go to and how familiar the...
Or which judge.
Yes.
I just thought that might be the case. Because there is a jurisdictional problem floating around there, isn't there, about whether there's a dispute as to parenting?
There's currently... one of our volunteer solicitors has a matter... I suppose it's a bit of a test case before the family court as to whether the donor has to be a party to proceedings or not when it's the mothers who've applied.
A known donor.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So I suppose we recommend that in some courts people will experience no difficulty. In some other courts, particularly I must say in rural or regional areas, people have had some difficulty and I suppose been put through more hoops, although ultimately people do seem to get orders. It's just the time.
And that parenting order then would help in getting authorising medical treatment or
yes.
dealing with the schools, giving consents
yes.
and so on.
That's right.
Yeah. You did mention the difficulties about making an application under the Family Provisions Act. Is that an area where you have conducted some cases? Or
no, we don't have case law experience on it, but it's something that we advise people when they're planning to have a child, that when the child's born they must make a will, because if they don't, these are the consequences. So I suppose it's part of our preventative education
yes,
work, but we haven't run any cases.
Thank you. Graham, have you got any questions?
Have clients of your legal centre complained of discrimination regarding leave entitlements, and can you tell us about what you've done with those complaints, and have you had any successful outcomes?
We haven't carried any complaints through the discrimination processes that I can recall. I think when it's only a matter of a few days leave or so on, it's not generally the kind of matters where people will take the time and effort to take complaints through. So my experience also is that gay and lesbian people are used to or accept that things are going to be different for them a lot of the time, that they don't have the same rights and entitlements as others, and to some extent that can lead to you know, there's not the degree of outrage you might expect
yes.
because it's something that happens to them so often.
Yes. What about possible restricted access to parental leave and carer's leave? Are you aware of any best practice examples where employers provide access to leave entitlements for same-sex families?
Yes, we certainly have clients who have employers who have agreed to grant leave, but that's obviously at the discretion of the employer. So it's very much the luck of the draw for the... but yes, we have known of cases where that has happened. And it's, you know, when you have long-standing valuable employees, it's most likely, and I suppose it's the people in the more vulnerable end of the labour market that
yes.
count.
Yeah. I just want to go back to inheritance too. You talked about the co-mother dying without a will and the person not inheriting. How would you recommend that that situation be rectified?
Well, I think, as I said, if it was possible to, I suppose it would be by amendment of the Status of Children Act, where just as in where there's an opposite sex couple who conceive a child using donor sperm, the partner is deemed to be the parent of the child. If that also applied in same-sex couples, then the co-mother would be legally recognised as the parent of the child, and that would solve the difficulty. So that would be, I think, our recommendation in terms of remedying that at a global level.
You've referred to someone being deemed to be a parent where there's a provision of sperm, for example.
Yes.
Is that a deeming that arises by reason of the provision of sperm only, or is it also
there is also provisions relating to donated eggs as well.
Yes.
So a mother can be, by operation of the provisions of the Status of Children Act, a mother who has conceived a child possibly using donor egg and donor sperm is deemed to be a parent of that child, despite the lack of biological connection with the child.
I suppose you could have a deeming provision a little bit like the one that I think exists in the Family Law Act, where the deeming arises because the child has been a child of a couple and lived in that situation as opposed to being biologically connected.
Yes. And I think another aspect of that would be provision for on birth certificates. In some states of Australia, I believe certainly in Western Australia, the parents noted on a birth certificate are gender neutral, and so the birth mother and co-mother can be noted on the child's birth certificate as parents.
With a presumption of parenthood.
Yes, that arises from that. So that could be another avenue to follow.
Do you have any examples of instances where, I'm going on to superannuation issues now, do you have any examples of instances where a trustee has refused to acknowledge a same-sex relationship under the interdependency provisions?
No. Those provisions, they came in a couple of years ago now. We haven't had anyone who's been knocked back. The clients we've had come to us are people who, I suppose, are worried in anticipation of difficulties. And I suppose we're able to offer them some reassurance. But nonetheless, it's still the case that they're being treated differently to couples in opposite sex relationships who don't have to overcome the same hurdles.
I don't think I have any other questions.
Charles, thank you very much. That's very helpful.